Hi, everybody. Good evening, and welcome to our first virtual living room coaching session of the Awaken Life program. Another first of many firsts this month. Really, just delighted to be reconvening the community for this gathering. Thank you for showing up here. I also just want to thank those of you who've stepped forward and connected with me and with the community on our online learning portal. I just want to thank you for your amazing comments, really, that have been posted on the November materials page. If any of you haven't been visiting there and looking at what's being shared, it's a very inspiring place to go. Let me put it that way. Certainly very inspiring for me. You know, as a teacher, particularly in this virtual context, you know, I'm always sort of putting a lot out there, if you will. You know, I'm sharing a lot, and I'm trying to transmit a lot and bring forth a lot. And you know, when you do this in real life, face to face with people, you're of course getting all their body language and their eyes and their, you know, connection right back at you, so you can kind of feel the impact you're having. Virtually, you know, the way I get to feel it is through what you share back with me there on the portal. And so when I go there, I just feel a wave of love and a lot of just tremendous uplift. So thank you. And I know that everybody feels that who's reading there, because there's just so much wonderful sharing about how the program's impacting you so far. So thanks for that. You probably saw that we have 16,000 of us now participating in this free month. We've just sort of left the doors open for anybody who wanted to jump in late, and a few thousand more did. And so we're quite a large gathering at the beginning, and we've grown larger. So welcome to those of you who've come on board in the last couple of weeks. I hope you've been able to find your way with everything and just get caught up, or, you know, at least listen to some of the materials. Great to have you with us. And I hope all of you have had a chance to at least work with some of the material. I'm sure some of you have done everything. I'm sure others of you have maybe done one thing, and hopefully, you know, you're all at least starting to work with the work that's here. We have a little more than 2 weeks left in our free month. It continues until December 1st. We have two more meditation practices to explore together over the next couple of weeks, and we'll be posting those on Sundays. And those, if you've looked at the practice guide that's posted, you'll see that really lays out the practices for the whole month, and these guided meditation audios augment or fit into that practice program that's laid out in the practice guide. So if you haven't downloaded and read the practice guide, I encourage you to do that. It helps you see the whole context for how this month works. I also just want to make sure that you saw our announcement that we have added one more live event to this month. We're doing a finale event on Wednesday, November 28th at this same time, 5:30 Pacific time. And the idea of this event, this won't be a regular monthly event, but because, you know, this free month on the one hand is sort of a sample of what we're going to be doing every month, but on the other hand, it's turned out to be quite a remarkable event with such a large number of us here. So I just felt like it made sense to have an event around the end of this month to really bring closure to what we've been through together, such a large community. And just what I'll be doing in there is really trying to make sure you get as much from this free month as possible. So we'll revisit all the month's practices that we've done. I'll highlight things from those and try to capture the core learnings of this month so that you can take what we've done here and move it forward into your life, regardless of whether or not you continue with us on the journey. And speaking of continuing with us, we of course are inviting you to stay on into next month and the next. And there's a link on your webcast page tonight, at the bottom of that page. If after tonight you feel so inspired to jump in, go ahead and registration for the ongoing program will stay open until December 6th. And what that means is, even though this is an ongoing program, it's not going to just, we're not just going to keep the door open all the time, because we feel it's more contained to have an open enrollment period. A group comes in, we all work together in the program for a while. You know, you can do it on a month-to-month basis and leave any time, or you can commit to a longer period and get a tuition discount for making a longer commitment. But regardless of that, we're going to close enrollment on December 6th. And so just have that in your mind if you're thinking about coming along, that it won't be open forever, and we'll get the cohort in and we'll be moving along. So anyway, more details about that toward the end of the month. This event, this virtual living room gathering that we'll do each month on this third Thursday of the month, it's different than what we did at the beginning of the month. The event at the beginning of the month is really where I will lay out the month's practice framework, the big picture for what we're doing that month, and then really try to teach you the practice as well as I can in that first opening workshop. And then you'll be doing the practices each week. And then the idea is, a couple weeks later, we get together here and you get to bring me your questions about the practice. But it won't only be that, because invariably I'm, of course, reading what you're sharing. I'm reading your questions. And so at the beginning of these virtual living room gatherings, I'll always be sharing a bit of a recap of the month's teaching, some different things than I had covered in the initial workshop, some new reflections I've had on it, or responses to things that you've brought up. So it's just another opportunity to work together on the practice, clarifying it, deepening it together. So, that is what this gathering is going to be. So, why don't we go ahead and dive in? what I'd like to do, what I always like to do at the beginning, is just take a few moments for us to formally begin, which means to leave behind the cares and concerns of the day and of our lives and fully show up here, sort of temporarily closing the door on everything else that might be on our mind and that might draw on our attention, so that we can fully be here. So I just invite you now to do that. Join me in taking a few deep breaths. Just letting go of your to-do list and anything that's concerning you right now. Allow yourself to fully be here in this moment with all of us. Just letting go and showing up. I want to invite you in this moment to allow everything about this moment to be exactly as it is. Allow yourself to be exactly as you are right now, feeling whatever you're feeling, thinking whatever you're thinking, having whatever experience you're having. Just let it all be. let it all happen. No need to change anything at all about this moment. And I also want to invite you to let go of any need to know anything. Let go of the need to make any meaning out of anything, to understand anything. Just for this brief opening meditation, just let go of the mind. Allow your awareness to simply be free and open and innocent. And in the wide open space of this moment, I now want to invite you to enter a more reflective mode and just notice if there are any questions that you have about the practice. This event is focused on how questions, how to do the practice, so any challenges or struggles you've had with the practice, or things that you feel might, if you could get clear about them, would help you step more fully into this. Just allow any of those questions to come forth now, to bubble up. And I want to invite you to join me in stepping into a place of curiosity, of open, innocent interest in what we don't already know and what might get revealed. And with that, we'll go ahead and begin. Thank you for that. So to begin today, because this is our first month, because this is the beginning of this whole program, I want to take a few minutes to revisit the big picture of what this practice is about, what it's pointing toward, and how it works. So as I shared in our opening workshop, this, you know, there are all kinds of meditation practices that are designed to bring about all kinds of different goals and that work in wildly different ways. This practice is entirely about spiritual awakening, which doesn't mean having necessarily exciting, colorful, ecstatic spiritual experiences, although it might bring those about, but it means awakening to what has been called our true nature, to who we really are beyond the mind and beyond the ego, to this sacred depth, this primordial essence consciousness that is by its nature extraordinarily wise, overflowing with love, creative and spontaneous, adept and agile at meeting whatever life brings our way. That brings us to our knees in the recognition that this whole event of this cosmos is it's an unfolding of a profound mystery that our mind will never be able to grasp. And that we are that's who and what we are. Even though it may not have ever seemed that way up until now, that the miracle of awakening is that we are a miracle and that our nature is luminous, radiant, infinite in its depth, unlimited in its power and capacity. And that it really is a repository for all of the highest and greatest virtues that we aspire to have and to bring to life. That those are natural to us. That's the great miracle of awakening. We human beings, we sense what virtue is. We sense what we would like. You know, if any of us were to sit down and say, gee, what's missing in the human race? Or better yet, what are the best qualities of human beings? You know, what would the ideal human be like? What qualities would they have? What qualities wouldn't they have? You know, what would that really be? We can, you know, all of us could kind of architect based on our experience of ourselves and others and what we sense is possible. We could come up with a good blueprint and say, this would be the ideal human. They would be generous, gracious, you know, would have a lot of very good judgment in the face of every situation. They would be able to bring creative responses. They would be able to flex and flow and adapt. You know, we would come up with our list. They might not be all identical, but they'd overlap a lot, and we could do that. And the great, extraordinary thing about spiritual awakening is that what we discover is that all of those things that we would love to see the human race embody and that we strive to embody with great effort, that they are utterly natural to us when we get out of the way, when we get our conditioned, unconscious, really habitual ego structure out of the way. Something else can come through that is that, and that's who we are. That's what this is about. And we are doing a practice here that is not a practice that's designed to gradually take us to the place I just described. It's not, you know, so some ways of doing meditation practice are sort of trying to cultivate positive qualities, or they're trying to concentrate our attention, or they're trying to focus us on achieving positive states and experiences, or make us more simply present, kind of what's been called mindful, more mindful. And there's a lot of different techniques. So this is not that. What this meditation practice is always only about right now in this moment of practice, being awake, practicing the natural habits, dispositions, attitudes, qualities of our own awakened consciousness, our own true nature. So that's why I call it the practice of direct awakening, because it is about awakening now in your meditation right now, not doing a meditation that might at some point catalyze a certain experience. But inherent in doing the practice, we're stepping into that. That's our practice, our effort. I don't mean that every moment any one of you, any one of us in this community, that any moment any of us is practicing, that we're doing that perfectly and that it's working perfectly. I'm not that naive. That's not my point. But my point is that what we're endeavoring to do with the practice is always about right now in this moment, I am doing this to be awakened right now in this moment. There's no time in this process. There's no future in this process. It is a process of right now practicing being who I really am, practicing being who and what I really am, instead of who my mind tells me I am, who my history and my life story tells me I am. So I've spoken about this as kind, you know, I think I spoke about it in the workshop at the beginning of the month about that there are, if we look at how awakened consciousness shows up, it shows up in particular predictable ways, and that those are things we can practice. That when we are, any one of us discovers awakened consciousness or wakes up, we find that we have a deep ease of being. We're deeply at ease with what is. In this practice, that's something we can practice. You practice, we did it in week one. Practice being at ease, practice letting things be no matter what they are. But the practice of allowing. Practice allowing in your meditation. It's a practice of something that is actually inherent to your true nature, this allowing things to be as they are, being deeply at ease. Awakened consciousness is also, you could look at it and see, wow, it's awakened consciousness is not grasping after knowledge and certainty. It's very comfortable in the unknown. A Christian mystic in the Middle Ages called it a cloud of unknowing. It's a famous book, Christian mystical book, The Cloud of Unknowing. It's about this sacrifice of the certainty of the mind in order to make room for the infinite unknown, the mystery of the divine. In that case, I can say divine because I'm talking about Christianity. In that case, and that also is something we are practicing. That's our practice this week, this practice of innocence, of resting in the unknown, not needing to know, not being interested in the mind, being more interested in that which is beyond the mind. The direct awakening practice right now. And so forth. You know, that's the nature of how this works. Or that's at least one way of understanding it. A second way of understanding this practice of direct awakening would be that we're doing practices that are designed to disrupt the habits of unawakened consciousness or ego consciousness. So you do this practice for half an hour a day or an hour a day, and when you're doing it, you're, you know, utterly undermining the momentum of non-awakening or of ego, because you're doing things that your ego and mind can't do, and you're doing them consciously. You're practicing them, so it's in that you're breaking a habit and creating a space for awakened consciousness to show up. and what we find when we do a practice like any of these consistently enough, long enough, it starts to show up if we really do the practice, because there's nothing else can show up. You know, we're sort of creating an environment where there's no oxygen for the ego to breathe in that environment, and so then, but something else can, that can breathe that atmosphere, it starts to show up. So that's what this is, and I just wanted to return to it now that we've had a couple weeks of working with the practice, just again, ground us in what it is we're up to. Just a few kind of meta instructions that I want to share with you to support your practice moving forward. And I've hinted at this, that you know, many of us who've done some meditation or been on a spiritual path, we come to meditation and we just have a deeply seated idea that what we're after is a special experience, a deep and special spiritual experience, that maybe we're going to feel great bliss or joy or elation or be overcome with incredible clarity and penetrating insight bursting through and powerful emotional states, spiritual emotional states, and this kind of very ancient idea that somehow I'm going to have this big fireworks show happen in my meditation practice that will then transform me, and that's how I'm going to awaken through the big event. And that meditation's kind of cultivating that. So I just want to really invite us, as we do these practices, to come to the practice not expecting any kind of special experience. Because here's the thing. You can have all kinds of remarkable experiences on the spiritual path. And often that's kind of a typological, it's a type thing, meaning certain people are very prone to powerful experiences, other people are not. But that is not the recipe. I mean, that's not the formula for awakening. It's almost a byproduct for certain personality types who have awakenings or do spiritual practices. They have all these powerful experiences. But the thing we have to realize about all experiences, from the worst ones to the best ones, is they're transitory, they're temporary, they come and they go. There's no one experience that you're going to now have and it's just going to stay forever. And if you could, would you really want it? Like, can you imagine like the state of consciousness that you just, okay, that's it, that's great, I want this now. All day, every day. You know? It's like, if it seems good initially, but if you think about it, you're like, no, actually, I don't think I want some certain feeling, state, etc., to just be here all the time. And it's a good thing because it won't. That's not how it works. Everything changes. All experiences change. States come and go. That's why they're called states. I want to ground us all in that when we're doing the practice. It can be a real relief to realize, oh, I don't have to experience anything in particular. But then, well, what is awakening if it's not an experience? Again, it's many things, but one way to look at it is that it is a clear seeing and knowing of the way things are. The ancient metaphor is that the lens has been cleared and we now see. Previously, we were ignorant. We couldn't see clearly. We didn't know with clarity. We were in ignorance. Now, there is this clarity. I see things as they are. And I don't mean see visually. It's easy. It's common to use visual metaphors. But I know things as they are. And because I now am able to be with reality as it is, what then can transform is our motivations. Previously, our motivational kind of structure, our motives were very mixed up in all kinds of conditioned habits and belief and unconscious values. Now, as I am able to see and know, I am now awake to this deeper context and dimension of who I am. And there is a whole different motivational movement that starts to flow, a difference that something different is moving us, is what I mean. Spirit's moving you. You know, and I mean that, you know, higher consciousness is now compelling us, motivating us, and we find different things matter to us. It's a whole different world with a whole different set of challenges and different, you know, set of goals. And anyway, so the point is, that's really what this is about, not about the ups and downs, you know, or the ups of our emotional higher states. So bring that to your practice and let that free you. Another thing I just want to say is that the practices we're doing here, this is important, and this also ties to some of the questions some of you asked. So I guess you could say we're entering the Q&A part now, because I'm harnessing some of those and bringing them together. These practices are designed to do in meditation, not in your daily life while you're engaging with the world and doing things. And the reason is that you really can't, you know, these practices are absolute in nature, right? Let everything be as it is. You can't let everything be as it is and do something. You can't. I mean, you're doing something. You're changing something. You're moving. You're acting. You're having an opinion. You're expressing a point of view. You're in action. You're saying, I want to do this, not that. So the practices, again, if you understand, we're doing it for a short time to enable something else to happen in consciousness during the time that we're doing it, which then we'll have, ideally, if we do it, we'll have all kinds of flow on or ripple effects that go into our life in all kinds of extraordinary ways. But we're not trying to let things be in daily life. We're not trying to not know anything in daily life. Like, what would that mean? To not know anything in your daily life. Anything. Now, right? You wouldn't, again, you would be utterly ineffective, utterly unable to do anything to contribute to this world. So, but again, what happens when we do that for a period of time in practice is that it enables something else to start to come forth and flow that will then have a great impact on your daily life. Now, that said, it doesn't mean that we all couldn't benefit from being a little less certain in our daily lives, right? From being a little less attached and needing to know beforehand and anticipate everything and have the right answers. And it also doesn't mean we couldn't all benefit from letting go a bit more, from letting be a bit more, going with the flow. So my point is, there are analogies in daily life. There are analogous practices that are, but they're not anywhere near as absolute as the meditation practices. So, will we work with some of those in this program? Yes. My plan is every month, as in addition to giving you the meditation practice, I'll also give you a daily life practice that correlates to it. I didn't do that this first month for a very specific reason, because I just felt when I looked at how many, we were doing four different practices, and I was trying to lay out all the context for all the practices and give you these, you know, complex written instructions for each practice. I said, if I try to overwhelm each week with a different daily life practice, it'll be too much for this, you know, first taste. But that will be part of this as well. So we will work with, well, how, okay, I can't do this completely in life, but what is the analogy in life? What's the way to open up to this in life as well? So, all right. Feel like I want to go ahead and move directly into the Q&A portion now. I think anything else I might want to say will just come out there, because I know I've looked at a lot of the questions that have been posted, and I want to have a full hour for your questions here. So good. So anyway, there are a few pointers for your practice or meta instructions that you can bring to that to help clarify it. Obviously, I'll keep peppering the program with more and more of that. So to the questions. So a lot of you have already asked them. I've sifted through, first with some help and then by myself, sifted through a lot of the questions that have already been posted. But of course, you're here live and you're welcome to post something right now. Just a couple things to say. As I was saying, this is a how to meditate course. It's not an informational program. It's not a philosophical program. And these are meditation coaching sessions, not informational Q&A sessions. So I'm going to really do my best to keep the inquiry here focused on how we do this practice, because I feel like that'll give us all the greatest benefit and the greatest chance of really, of this practice really working. So when you ask a question, I want to invite you to frame it in a how-to way or share what you're doing and ask for my coaching on that. That's also fine to say, hey, I'm trying to do the practice. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm experiencing. I have this question. Does that make sense? That's a great way to frame a question up. Also want to say we're a very large learning community here, and there are a lot of us listening. So whether you're writing in a question or raising your hand to speak with me on the phone, I want to invite you to ask your question in a way that brings everyone else along with you. Just keep in mind how many are here. Make it relevant for the whole community. See the universal nature of your question. Bring that forth and keep your questions brief, to the point, and limit yourself to one question in order to make room for others and save me from having to filter you. Okay. All right. So with that, we'll go ahead on in, and I'll start with a few of the questions that have already been given and then move to questions that are coming in live. If you have a question you want to ask me on the phone, the way you do that is you press star 2 on your phone keypad, and you can see the Q&A box there on your webcast page, and you post those, and those will be handed to me. Okay, here we go. So let's see. I'm going to take a question that a few people asked in different ways, and I'm going to take this first because it's tied to what we were just talking about. There was a question that a few people were asking in different ways about this first practice that we did of letting things be, and the question was really about how could that possibly lead to more, you know, positive action in the world. If we're just letting things be, doesn't that lead to becoming passive, maybe even apathetic? If I'm just letting be, it means, you know, the whole world can be burning down like it is here in California right now. God bless everyone who's struggling. Or, you know, it could all, you know, terrible things are happening and I'm just letting them be. I'm just being passive and apathetic. How could that lead me to enlightened action? And so I want to just briefly, again, try to clarify this so that we don't, because a lot of people struggle with this when they first start doing this practice. It's like, wait, what about life? What about the world? I'm giving it all up. So there's two ways to look at this. One is that the practice of allowing, as we were just saying, opens the door to awakened consciousness. It's a natural expression of awakened consciousness, and when we do it, it disrupts the ego's habit of trying to control everything and makes room for this higher consciousness. Once that higher consciousness is flowing, it brings forth clarity, insight, wisdom, and is also filled with compassion. And what does the world need more than wise, compassionate action? So that's a very simple way to understand it. It's probably the simplest, truest way to understand it, is this enables your true nature to come forth, which will then, as it does, show up in the world in remarkable ways. Bringing, you know, you show up in the world with what they call bliss-bestowing hands. You become a gift to the world, and that gift is expressed through your actions in many ways. But there's a little more, you know, I had a feeling that one of the people asking about this, Tom, you in Texas, that you wanted something a little more of a technical explanation for it. So what I would like to say for that is just for all of us to consider, what is it that prevents enlightened action from happening? So if our true nature is enlightened, and if enlightened action would be the most natural form of behavior, what's in the way of that? Why isn't everybody doing that all the time? And I would say a simple way to answer that would be to say, number one, we're all, you know, overwhelmed with what are called cognitive biases, meaning things that prevent us from seeing things as they are. There are documented hundreds and hundreds of different specific biases that people tend to have that distort our perception. They prevent us from seeing clearly. You add to that what the Freudians discovered, which were the ego defenses or the defense mechanisms, which are all mechanisms in you and me that in order to keep our ego, meaning in order to keep our story about ourselves intact, our belief about ourselves intact, we have all these ways of avoiding reality, of not letting in information that might challenge our worldview and our particular worldview about ourselves. So here we are totally programmed to be unable to meet reality as it is, and therefore unable to respond to reality in a really helpful way. And we only have to look at people around us or look honestly at ourselves to see the ways we don't respond in helpful ways. We would like to, you know, do the right thing, but we reacted in a kind of primitive, unconscious way, out of fear, out of shame, out of greed, out of a need to protect our self-image or protect, you know, look good in the eyes of other people, or whatever it is, you know, all the ways that we basically don't respond in the most conscious, kind, wise, loving, enlightened ways arise from this fundamental structure of ignorance that I just described in psychological terms. And then, of course, the other thing blocking it, other than the bias and the defense structures, are what we call unenlightened motivations. Just all the ways that we're primitively motivated to, you know, to not lose face, to, you know, to be afraid of things that aren't really scary. You know, like the fear of public speaking is a really easy example of that. Most of us are terrified to talk in front of a group of people, but there's nothing scary about it, really. But it's terrifying structurally. I'm not going to go into a speech about why I've analyzed it. You know, but anyway, the point is just lots of irrational fears that dominate us, and short-term narrow self-interest dominates us. So anyway, all these elements of unenlightened motivation all get in the way of what would be our natural enlightened action. Letting things be as they are is a chance to step out of all that. Just for that period of meditation, you step out of it. You're letting things be. That means all the bias potentially is melting away. You're also letting go of all those unconscious motivations, the need to have things be this way or that. You're just letting be. That then opens the door to another kind of living, another kind of consciousness, another way to be. It's a little more psychological, a little more technical way. Now, Tom was saying, are there any studies that have proven this? I don't know, because I don't read academic studies. It's not my field. It's not how I approach this. I'm more of a field researcher, and I'm not publishing my, trying to write papers about it. But it's certainly been my experience and the experience of, you know, thousands of people that these kinds of practices do bring forth a different consciousness that shows up in life in a different way. So I would just encourage you to be the experiment yourself and see, you know, see what comes out of you when you do a practice like this on a consistent basis. Okay, so maybe that was a little philosophical, but it's really trying to get rooted in, again, how the practice works. Let's go to a very practical question from Bernice in Edmonton. She says, there seems to be a conflict between focusing on your voice during the meditations and doing the instructions, you know, that you're teaching. So what Bernice is saying, I'm just going to jump to the other end of the spectrum here, something very simple and practical. She's saying, look, if I listen to this guided meditation with you, on the one hand, you're telling me to not know, let's take this week's practice because it's a better example, to not know anything, to not try to understand anything. Don't I inherently have to be trying to understand you, Craig, and what you're saying to be able to do the practice? It seems like a contradiction. So I realize that it is. And what I would encourage you to do is to just try it and go with it. I mean, the way to understand what the guided meditations are is that they're sort of a combination of meditation instruction and a chance to follow the instruction. And so, you know, you'll notice I give a little instruction, then I give a little pause, I give a little more instruction, I give a little pause. Now, it's not the same as you just sitting quietly and working with the instruction on your own for a period of time. But some of us find if we just are able to kind of, in other words, like with that practice, to not be grasping after what I'm saying, not be trying to comprehend it, but just let it flow through you and see where it takes you. Because the words have a certain potency to them. And there's a whole another dimension of how this teaching works, which I call activation. That's what in the traditions has been called transmission often. But it's the fact that the consciousness behind the words and the consciousness that the words point to is itself a transformative power. And if you just sort of let the guidance flow and just let yourself move with it without kind of going, well, how do I do that? Do I think about what he's saying? Just kind of leave all that cognitive effort behind and just let the meditation instructions carry you in a sense, like just a flow. You know, there's some quiet, there's some instruction, there's some quiet, there's some instruction. You're just moving with it. Not struggling against it. Yeah, it's not the same as doing it quietly, but a lot of people find it much easier. Right? But again, this is why I encourage you to do them both, to do it quietly on your own with the written instruction, then do what listening to the guided, because you'll be getting the full picture. Because there's a lot that I share in those guided meditations that won't come through no matter how thoroughly I write it down. You know, I can write you a full page of instructions, but it won't be the same as me guiding you in it. So I encourage you to work with them both and just know that, yeah, there's a bit of a contradiction there, but I don't think it's really in the way if you let it not be in the way. That's my suggestion. All right. Thank you. On a similar practical kind of note like that, I think it's Garveen in Holland, is saying, when I do the innocence meditation, I'm wondering whether it is wise to say or think, kind of repeat to myself internally, the instructions. I don't know. I am not interested. Every time a thought comes up, just to stop it, I sometimes hear myself repeating those sentences again and again, which does help stop the thoughts, but there's kind of a lot of murmur in the air in my head instead. So how does this work? So it's a great question as we're doing these practices. A lot of us have this kind of a question, don't we? We say, well, what am I really doing when you take up an instruction like this? Like, don't have any interest in the mind. Don't, whatever comes up, don't be interested in it. So on the one hand, I'm just saying that. Don't be interested in it. So it's up to you to then figure out how not to be interested in your mind. I don't mean figure out, but I mean, you know, to work out how not to do it. You got to kind of try it. You have to experiment. Okay. What does that mean? A thought comes up. I don't try to shove the thought away, but I just don't. What if I don't give my attention to the thought? What's that like? If I just keep my attention open and free and expansive without narrowing in on anything. I'm not zeroing in on any of the thoughts. I'm not getting interested in what the mind's presenting, its latest theories, its questions. I'm just staying out of that. what's that like? So you're kind of actively, I would say the best way to describe is you're kind of actively working with the instruction, in a sense, trying to find your way with it. You're trying to discover how to do that or not do that, in this case, how to not know. You're kind of trying to explore how to do that in your own meditation, your own experience. But often what you're saying is what we end up doing. We sort of go, well, I don't know how, but I have this instruction, so I kind of keep repeating it almost as an antidote to just being lost in thought. I say, no thoughts, or no interest in thoughts, or I don't know anything. And we kind of sort of throw that at our mind whenever our mind comes up, and we can feel that that's not really quite what how the practice is meant to operate. So what I would say, so I think I described how I'm encouraging you to do it just now, but also I don't want you to feel too rigid about like you don't need to keep the instructions out of your practice. The instructions are there to help you. So you do bring them into your practice, and there's a certain amount of reminding yourself of the practice while you're practicing that's necessary and beneficial. There's a certain amount of that. Like, you know, let's say you're sitting there practicing for a while, you're doing it, and then you suddenly, you know, discover that you've been totally absorbed in the thought stream for the last 5 minutes or for a while. You don't know how long, but you're just like, whoa, I just got totally derailed by thinking about this trip I'm going on tomorrow. And did I pack everything? And I went down a whole rabbit hole of thoughts, and you know, I've just totally left the meditation behind, and I went into that. And so at a moment like that, on the one hand, you already have snapped out of it because you've become self-aware again, but it's natural to then remind yourself of the practice. What am I practicing here? I'm practicing not being involved in the mind. I'm practicing not being interested in that when it comes up. Okay, so I'm continuing with that, and you just reassert it. So, and I don't mean with all the narrative I just described, but you just reassert the practice and come back to it. And that's fine. So it's fine to do a bit of that. We don't want to turn the practice instructions into a mantra, though. Let things be, let things be, let things be. We're not doing that here. It's not going to help you do this practice to just repeat it over and over. So I hope that clarifies. It's not black and white, but that's some nuance around how it works. And all right, now if any of you do want to ask me a question on the phone, press star 2. I know everybody gets so intimidated. 16,000 people. I'm going to step up on stage. I have stage fright. It's very understandable. That's okay. I have a ton of written questions. I will not run out of written questions, but if any of you do want to say hi and ask me something, that's okay too. I'll come back to that in a sec. Okay. Just scanning here. Can I practice these meditations while walking? I'm a beginner at sitting still, but I like walking in nature. That's from Anna in the UK. You can. But here's what I would say. If you're going to do these practices, walking, what you need to do is you need to walk somewhere where you can be undistracted by your surroundings. So that means ideally where there's not a lot of people swirling around you and bicycles and skateboards and walking and making noise and all that. That would make it very difficult because you'd have to be paying attention to what's around you so you didn't run into people and things and all that. So it's very hard to be very absolute about a practice like this in that environment. You said walking in nature. If the path is wide, like I would say walking on a narrow mountain path where you kind of have to be paying attention to your path, you're not going to really be able to deeply do the practice. If you're talking about a wide open dirt road in the countryside with no one around and you're just strolling and you're able to really forget about the walking and give all of your attention to the practice and just let your gaze come down to the road in front of you and you walk and walk very slowly, not at a normal clip. Just walk very slowly on the country road, fully absorbed in doing, again, what the practice that you're here to do, the letting be, the innocence, moving on next week to awareness practice, whatever it is, you give all to it. You can. Again, it won't be as absolute as you're able to do sitting still, certainly, because there's some amount of managing the body down the path, but you'll be able to go pretty far with it, potentially, if you have all those things in place that I mentioned. Okay. Esperanza in Vancouver said, thanks for the wonderful teachings. When I follow the practice of letting go of the need to know, of innocence, I still sense a present, impersonal knowing that's watching me not knowing. I mean, it seems to know that I don't know. And my question is this knowingness of the same nature as the personal one that grasps for understanding? Is it still a wanting to know? Well, Esperanza, I can't know for sure, but from the sound of what you're describing, I would guess probably not. This does not sound to me like your ego's needing to know. When I talk about this need to know, I want to be clear because you know our awakened self, our essential nature is interested. One of its qualities is natural interest, but it's not a grasping kind of interest. It's not a desperate kind of need. It's a kind of open, innocent interest. You know, very free. It's not born of a fear of the unknown or a fear of the insecurity of uncertainty and not knowing. So it really is very open to new insight, wisdom, and knowledge flowing through, but it doesn't try to hold on to it. It allows the wisdom to flow, it doesn't grasp on. So when you're saying you're doing this practice and you sense a kind of knowing that's there, you know, it sounds to me like it's probably in the right direction, kind of higher knowing, but not needing to know something in particular, it feels like, when I feel into what you're saying. It's even aware of the not knowing going on. Sounds, again, I can't comment with just a few words like that on exactly where you're at, but I feel the general direction is good, so I think you can keep going with that. And you know, really, I guess all I can say is I can give you guideposts, which is, you know, what happens when you don't know anything about that and you don't know in relation to that and you don't need to know even what that is. Like, there's still always you here being free, you know, relinquishing the need to know, taking that next step into the unknown. And as long as you are free from this compulsive grasping after the mind and knowing, as long as you're really free of that, then it's going right. Catherine in Hussweiler, I don't know, said, should there be a difference in these different practices, being aware of innocence, of not knowing? For me, oh, I see what you're saying. So she's saying, and when I do this practice, should it be different? So for me, my mind goes blank when I'm engaging in the meditation, and there's no difference. If there should be, how should there be? So I don't know if I get exactly your question, but what I will pick up on is that you said your mind goes blank when engaging in meditation. Now, I bet that's not true for most of us. Not that many of us have the experience of a blank mind. A lot of people wish they could have a blank mind. But I want to really clarify here that, again, and in certain meditation practices, having an empty mind, a mind quiet with no thoughts, is a goal. Not this practice. That is not a goal of this practice. And, in fact, many of the kind of higher non-dual meditation practices, even traditionally, did not encourage the quieting of the thought. The Mahayana Buddhists had a term for what you're talking about, which they called non-conceptual stillness. Non-conceptual stillness, just absence of thought. Now, the reason I don't encourage that, and that we're not trying to bring that about, and that I want to guide you away from that, is that it's not considered productive for awakening to have a completely quiet mind. And the reason is that awakening is not about it's not about having no mind. Like, if that were the case, we could just all, get lobotomized, have our, brains disconnected, and somehow then we'd be enlightened. It's not about this kind of blankness or stillness. Awakening is about the discovery of the way things are. So, like, in relation to thought, which is the mind that we're talking about, in relation to thoughts arising, awakening is about no longer being deceived by thoughts. It's about no longer, it's a couple things. It's ultimately about seeing the true nature of the mind, seeing that thought is actually not separate from consciousness itself, and that thought is merely a play of this inherent, liberated, awakened consciousness manifesting as the content of thought. So there's this inherent realization that, the mind isn't something in the way of my meditation. It's not something blocking higher consciousness. It's just part of it. So this is non-duality. So the mind now is not the enemy. It's not in your way. It's just a flow of awareness. So that's part of what the awakened consciousness discovers about thought. But also, maybe more importantly, is then therefore we're able to now have profound discernment in the face of thought in life. So we can see which thoughts are accurate reflections of reality, which ones are distortions, which ones are arising from our fixed beliefs, our limiting ideas, our habitual ways of knowing, the worldviews we cling to. And we start to see with clarity. The mind is now revealed with clarity instead of being a source of confusion. So all that is to say, having a blank mind in meditation isn't going to help us awaken very much, if at all. And so I would encourage you, it's good to have a little content going on. Not a lot, not to be lost in thought, not to be absorbed in the mind, but having some thoughts arising, having some feelings arising, some sensations, is part of this practice, because we're discovering what it is to let those things be. So we are discovering what it is to let the mind be, to let it flow, but without, getting involved with it. The innocence practice, we're learning what it is to not engage with the mind, not be interested in the mind, but to let it continue to be there. You can't really practice not being involved in the mind if there's no mind. You get that? Maybe I'm getting to a simpler way to say everything else I just said. If the practice is one of not knowing, but there's no thoughts there at all, then you can't really practice not knowing. I mean, you can't practice letting go of the need to know, because there's no knowing even trying to occur. So how do you get a little content going? I would say, if you're somebody, for any of you who find this blank mind thing happening, I would just say relax your practice a little more. Don't be so intense in your focus, because what tends to make the mind very quiet is a very intense, concentrated focus. So you relax your concentration, ease off the gas a little, let some thoughts flow, even let yourself be distracted for a minute or two. You gotta have some of the machinery moving. Okay? So I hope that helps, and I hope I didn't confuse anybody else. Wait a minute. I thought it was all about a quiet mind. I know a lot of us think that. It's come down from some of the traditions that way. Oh, I got a hand up. Let's go ahead and mix things up a little bit here. I'm going to Fort Collins, Colorado, Rosalino. It might have, it sometimes has the caller ID wrong, by the way, because it's, the system is drawing it from the phone company and those aren't always accurate. But if you're in Colorado and you had your hand raised, you're on. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Hi. Good. We hear you. A little quiet, but we'll boost you up.
Yeah.
Hey.
Okay. Well, I guess my question is, isn't anything and everything we do always trying to reach somewhere? Reach or grasp for, whether we're reaching or grasping for awakening, we're trying to achieve something as opposed to just being?
Yes and no. So this is, so for anybody who couldn't hear, because the audio is a little muffled, it was saying that, you know, even if we're striving for spiritual awakening, aren't we trying to achieve something or get somewhere? And isn't that essentially in contradiction to just being as we are? Like, I think, you know, and this is a big question for a lot of us. How do I have a goal of enlightenment? You know, what, like, cause here, and you know, and I set up this contradiction and I will take full responsibility for it. You know, at the very first practice, didn't I? Those of you who listened to the week one, I said, I spent about 5 minutes at the beginning saying, get connected to a powerful intention to awaken. Why do you want to awaken? Why do you want to do it for you? Why do you want to do it for others? And what's the biggest context that you can connect with for why awakening is important? And ground yourself in that. And then I said, and now set that aside, as let that be the foundation for your practice, and now go into a practice of just letting everything be and allowing everything as it is. Now, those seem really contradictory movements, and you know, here you're bringing it up well. So here's the thing. This isn't something I've really spoken about here, but it's one of my, it's actually one of the things I wanted to talk about at the beginning tonight, but I kind of felt like I was going to go on too long and not get to your questions, but here we are coming back to it. So I have this kind of paradoxical job as a spiritual teacher, which is, and these are just two parts of my own nature, I would say, but one is to, you know, yes, teach you these practices of awakening that will unlock these inner doors to awakened consciousness into your own true nature. And many of these are about this radical kind of passivity in the practice, you know, really stepping out of the momentum of trying, as you were just saying, trying to get anywhere, trying to make anything happen, of any goal orientation at all, leaving it all behind, just being with this moment. So I'm doing that. But at the same time, I have this compulsion and this, I feel, job to inspire you to go for it. And to, because to do what spiritual awakening is asking of us is such a radical leap. It's such a radical departure from how we've conducted our entire lives and really how humanity, how the human being, how the human animal operates. It's a quantum upgrade to a whole different operating system, if you will. It's a leap out of life as it's been into a completely different, extraordinary kind of consciousness and extraordinary kind of life. And so, and that takes, sometimes it takes guts and courage, and sometimes it takes tremendous heart and care, and it can take great commitment and a powerful intention and a willingness to persevere, a willingness to be very scared and insecure because the world's falling apart beneath our feet. This ego structure we've invested our whole life in is starting to dissolve before our eyes. And so, you know, me, and not just me, but teachers throughout the ages have found that this is something that requires great intention. It requires great passionate longing, commitment, wanting to go beyond. And that if we don't have that, we'll probably kind of go, yeah, okay, I'm going to sit in meditation and just be as I am. But it won't be a profound version of being as you are. It'll just kind of be your mediocre self, fully identified with the mind and all of the unconscious habits. And there won't be any escape velocity to really break out of the atmosphere and the stratosphere and into the super consciousness, I guess in this metaphor would be outer space. But that, and so there's this great paradox on the path. You know, as the Indian sage who is probably more as much as anybody known for the kind of just pure being, let it be type teaching, Ramana Maharshi, he said, you have to want enlightenment like a drowning person wants air. You know, it has to be that intense. And yet this was a person who spent his whole life only teaching to just let be, really. So it is a paradox, but I hope that we can all see through the, you know, instead of get confused by the paradox, really see the truth inherent in that both of these are real true dimensions of the path that even though on the surface they contradict each other, they actually can work together inherently. But again, like in practice, what that means is you can't sit in your meditation wanting to be awake. You know, you've got to kind of cultivate that intent and then wholeheartedly just do the practice. That's how you express the intent when you're practicing. You know, I'm going to just let everything be, everything, including this. And even all the things I think I can't possibly let them be, I'm going to let those be. And even this moment that seems confusing and uncertain, I'll let that be. You know, and you really go all the way with the practice with no goal in mind in that moment other than doing the practice. So in the practice, there's no contradiction because you're just doing it. But, you know, but what's going to enable you to bring that kind of intensity to it is everything I'm talking about. So I don't know. I'm going to stop there. And I hope that clarifies for you some of it or at least gives you another way to reflect on it. Appreciate the question. Still there?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Yeah,
that,
that
helped.
Thank you.
That helped? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. All right. Take care. Bye. All right. Okay. Come back to another written one. Then we'll come to another phone one in a few. Cheryl in Albuquerque just pointing out that she found it easier to meditate with everybody all together when we did the big workshop at the beginning of the month, and trying to do the practices on our own is more difficult. What do I do about that? You know, there are things that make practice easier, and we're not all the same in this regard. Some people do kind of say, well, actually, when I go off on my own and I take the instruction and everything's quiet and it's just me, and I'm like, go out in nature and I just do it, I find that I'm able to go deeper. You know, I feel distracted by the idea that I'm with a group, or, you know, when you're guiding me in the practices, I feel like I'm distracted by you guiding me. And so we're different, some people that way. But in general, there are things that make it easier to practice. And one of them is practicing together. And that includes virtually, like we do here. It's one of the reasons I created this program. So we have some opportunities to come together live like this, like the workshop at the beginning of the month, and really do some work together live and benefit from the power of that collective field. Also, having some guidance along the way, like guided meditations, can also support similarly, because then it's like you and I, we're doing it together. Cheryl, you and me, when you listen to that guided meditation, think of it like, oh, I'm sitting down with Craig and we're going to meditate. He's just talking about his meditation. You know, that's what I'm doing, by the way. Another way to understand those guided meditations, I'm just meditating out loud. I'm just describing the practice that I'm doing in the moment to you. So maybe you can kind of come along. I'm kind of taking you by the hand going, let's do this. Now let's do this. Now let's do this. As for how to make it easier to do on your own, there are certain things. Maybe I'll just say a couple things that, again, I haven't said in this program. Environment can help. If you can create a sacred space in your home that's your little temple, if you have a room that you can do that with, that's great. Or if you just have a corner of a room that you use for other things, but that corner of the room, you make it your little meditation spot, and you put some objects that are meaningful to you there. Again, you know, all of us are different. Some people like statues of saints or Buddhas or whatever, and that does it, or sacred art, or just a few artifacts, or, you know, different things for us, but whatever for you helps you go, this is my spot. And you, and then when you, another thing that will help you do it on your own is taking a couple minutes before you do the practice to ground yourself in why you're doing the practice, to remind yourself of this, the immense significance of waking up and why you're on the path. And you take a few minutes to kind of reflect on that, get grounded in an intention for that. I guided this process in two different ways. In the week one meditation, we did it one way. The week two meditation, we did a different part, aspect of that. Either of those or a combination of those, but something like that on your own, it helps you go, okay, yes, I'm in my sacred spot, my meditation spot, my temple, and now I'm connecting with the bigger why behind this practice. And then, you know, from that place, really bring everything to it. Say, I don't care how much my life is confusing me or worrying me or stressing me out or anything else. In this moment, I leave it all behind and I'm giving myself to this practice for this next half hour with 100% focus for the greatest reason there is, because I know that this matters for something bigger than me. And then you give yourself to it. And with all of that, the environment, the intention, the focus, the, you may find that it gives more fuel to you on your own there doing your practice. So there's a couple ideas. Thank you. Randy in Asheville says, why do you advise us to keep our eyes open or keep them closed for the duration of the meditation session as opposed to alternating or switching off between them? So a little quick word about our eyes open and closed, but first your specific question. So the reason I encourage you to do one or the other is because when you're doing the meditation practice, you want to be, whatever practice you're doing, you really want to be stepping beyond preference and even beyond choosing. You know, like if you take that first practice, you know, don't try to change anything. So like now I'm sitting here and I've started meditating with my eyes closed. Won't I be trying to change something if I decide somewhere in the meditation, oh, I think I'm going to open my eyes. Right now I have to violate the practice to make a decision to evaluate. So now I have to make meaning. So practice number two, don't make any meaning, don't know anything. Let's say I'm doing that practice. I'm sitting here with my eyes open. Well, if I'm going to now evaluate my practice, determine that I think I want to try closing my eyes and then close my eyes, I've just had to abandon the practice to go into this process of evaluation and decision making and doing it. So we want to leave as much out of this practice as possible, as many possible diversions. So you just, you know, ideally we don't move during these practices either physically, but sometimes we get some pain, we have to move a little, but we want to minimize any movement because, again, moving's the same way. I'm sitting here, oh, I feel a little pain in my back. Should I move? Shouldn't I move? I think I'm going to move. You know, you're doing that instead of meditating. So ideally, we are able to sit still, to have our eyes open or closed just in one, you know, one place, and then we forget about the body completely and we just do the practice. So that's really why I encourage no, you know, shifting things around on any level like that. As for why open or closed, I don't think I said much about that. I'd probably just mainly say experiment with those, notice the differences. People tend to find that meditating eyes open, it can keep you more present, less prone to drifting off into your mind because you've got the world in front of you here. You're kind of, I'm here, I'm focused, I'm present, my eyes are open. So if for anybody who finds that you do it eyes closed and you're constantly getting distracted by thought, try meditating eyes open for a while. See if it helps you stay more present with the practice. On the other hand, people who need to maybe kind of get in touch with the deeper flow and let the flow start to carry you, and you know, the practice we're going to do in the last week of this month about letting meditation happen and letting yourself be carried by it. Like, and if you have trouble with that or trouble accessing that, you might be someone who says, why don't you try meditating with your eyes closed for a while and start to make room for some of the deeper currents in consciousness to stir and to notice them, because you don't have the world in front of you anymore. You're just there in the blankness of no sensation. So there you go. Wow, we are cranking through our time. I'll probably go a few minutes over just because I have a lot of questions, but I'm not going to go a lot over. Try to have some discipline. Okay, let me, since I said I would grant equal time, I'm going to take one more on the phone here. Let's try to make it brief. It's from Austin, Texas. Anouk?
Yeah, hi.
Hello.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm excited to ask this question. I have a lot of pain, always, and always had, and fibromyalgia, arthritis, and so on. And when you talk about let it be, or letting it be, is very hard, and I would love to have some suggestions on, or guidance on, how do you not let your body interfere in letting it be?
No, thank you. I'm sorry to hear about your chronic pain. This is something that, you know, just like I said, there are things that can make meditation easier. There are things that can make meditation harder. And chronic pain is one of the things that makes meditation harder, you know, for a lot of us. And I've worked with a lot of people over the years with all kinds of different chronic pain, and how to practice with that. So, it's the most helpful thing I can say. I mean, you know, clearly you get that the main, you know, it depends. I guess I would say partly it depends on which practice we're doing. You know, like you brought up the practice of letting things be. That's obviously the first practice we did this month. Now, it's sort of clear what the instruction says. It says, okay, I'm sitting here. My body's in pain right now. I'm not going to try to make the pain go away. It doesn't mean, now here's what's important. See, sometimes we think, oh, if I'm going to let things be, that means I have to feel good about things. The way things are. Like letting things be means feeling okay about things or feeling good about things. It doesn't really mean that. You might hate the fact that you're in pain, meaning it might be miserable that you're in pain and you don't like it at all. And on some level, you wish it would go away. But you know what? For this meditation practice, you're going to not try to change it. You're just going to let it be painful. You're even going to let the fact that you're uncomfortable with the pain, that you don't like the pain, you're going to let that be there. That's my emotional relationship. There's the pain. There's my emotional relationship to the pain, which is, ugh, the pain is back. Okay, I'm going to let that be. I'm not going to try to make myself like the pain. I'm not going to try to make the pain okay. I'm not going to try to push the pain away. I'm not going to pretend it's great to have the pain. But I, for this brief period, I'm not going to struggle against the pain. I'm not going to struggle with it. I'm not going to worry about it, you know, because I think often we have chronic pain. We worry, you know, oh, my pain, you know, and my body, ugh. You know, we stress out about it. We worry about it. We have anxiety about it. We have a lot of emotion. You know, we're going to just be with what's here now. And we just do that wholeheartedly. And again, here's part of the thing, because often I know when people have things like chronic pain or some malady, it can be psycho-emotional, it can be physical, but some malady that they would like to get rid of in their life, they'll come to the meditation hoping the meditation will help them get rid of that. Like, I hope the meditation helps the pain go away, or I hope the meditation helps me feel, you know, helps my anxiety go away. So, and it's reasonable to want that, but we can't, for this meditation practice to work, we can't approach it as a remedy for any specific thing. We can't approach it wanting a cure for anything. We have to approach it on its own terms with, you know, with the trust that the meditation will unveil its, you know, its own logic, its own intelligence, its own process that may or may not impact that pain. But what we are trusting is that if I go all the way with this, if I really give myself to it, that I might find that who I am is different on the other side, and that who I am is now somebody who's able to find a way to be with this issue, in this case pain, in a new way, that maybe I'm free. Even though the pain doesn't go away, I'm free in the face of my pain in a new way because I've gone somewhere new in myself and discovered a new dimension of myself that really transcends the body in a very fundamental way and is really, you know, it's a joy and a freedom and a lightness of being that might, again, that might not change the pain at all. It might. I don't know. You know, sometimes it does. But that I'm approaching this on a whole different level than the level at which my pain and my struggling against my pain exists. And, you know, and then you see. So with that practice, it would be like that. With a different practice, it would be different. But the key is you really give yourself to the practice. Now, the other thing is, if there are things you can do to minimize the pain, like sit in a different position, lie down, I don't know, take medication that helps it beforehand. You know, I mean, if there are things you can do to minimize it structurally in different ways, by all means, do those things. You know, we're not trying to tough it out here. This is not about gritting it out. But you know, again, so anyway, there's some reflections. Is any of that help at all? Or is there a deeper layer that I'm getting to? Or what do you think?
Yeah, when I hear that, I feel that the pain gets bigger. And so when I struggle against it, I sort of feel I can keep it at bay.
But if you let it be, it kind of grows?
I'll keep it going.
Huh. You let it be, it grows. Boy, well, I would say, I'm going to say it with a lot of caution. If you can handle it, you might take the risk to let that go all the way and see if it transmutes into something else. Now, when I say it with caution, I mean, I'm not daring you to do that. I'm not challenging you to do that. I'm not saying you should do that. But if that feels like a safe thing for you, because you may find that, like, initially it grows and then it kind of transmutes into something. You know, pain is a mysterious thing, you know, when you really get into it and study it. And it can transform and transmute through changes in consciousness. It can. I'm not saying it will. I'm not saying there's a remedy. But, you know, what I really hope and what I really want to do is free you to fully do the practice and trust it. And that might mean letting your pain grow, but seeing where it leads. Okay? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's helpful. I mean,
with caution. With your own, use your own wisdom. Don't, you know, Greg told me to do that and it was the worst pain I've ever experienced. You know, I don't want that, but, you know, see what's down that road.
I've taken a lot of your classes already and you've never addressed this, so it's really helpful. I mean, I've taken your classes. Months and months. So that's great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Take care. Bye. Okay. So we'll move back over into. Yeah. Well, maybe with such a big group, I should have made this one longer, but I know we all have limited attention span. I'll just take, since I talked a lot at the beginning, I'll just take another 5 minutes or so, see if I can move through a few of the written ones that, and I'll look for ones that I think probably a lot of us have, just knowing these practices. Sharon in Quispampsis says, when allowing, I got to a point where I started not knowing and not needing to know. But if that happens, do I stay with allowing or do I move on with not knowing? I know the practices build on one another, but am I allowing if I start not knowing? This happens a lot when I meditate, doing one practice, then going into another in the same meditation. Sharon, I wonder if you could just let that happen in whichever way it does and not even worry about allowing and not knowing are not in any way opposed. So when you said, well, if I start not knowing, you're not. I mean, of course you're allowing if you're not knowing. They're two movements on the same, they're going in the same direction. So it's natural that one would flow into the other, and you can let it flow in that way. I mean, I do want to say that said, I encourage you, and this is for everyone, I encourage you to really do the practice that you sat down to do that day, whatever it was. You know, right now we're doing one practice a week. I encourage you to stay with it all week, fundamentally, because you're going to get the most benefit out of the practice if you stay with the regimen and don't turn it into a jazz riff. You know, stay with your scales here, your formal practice instruction. But, you know, in the midst of a meditation, if this is all kind of flowing together, you don't need to struggle against that either. You can just let that all flow. Those don't sound like they're in any way in contradiction. Okay. Thank you. All right. Covered that. Lamara said, if heavy old wounds or dramas come up in meditation, what's the best way to transform the experience? The best way is to do the meditation practice wholeheartedly and don't try to transform the experience. Let the meditation do what it's going to do. Don't try to use your meditation as a therapy to transform or heal your psychological wounds. In my experience, if you go all the way with these meditation practices, they bring about a kind of psychological and emotional healing that nothing else can touch. A kind of holistic, because why? Because you are discovering a part of yourself that was never wounded or traumatized and that therefore does not need to be healed. And the more you make room for that dimension of who you are to come forth and to start to live your life, the less a lot of those wounds seem like they need healing anymore. It's not that they all kind of show up and get dealt with one at a time. It's that something much more fundamental happens to your being. And you find, my God, I'm whole. I'm free. I'm not this kind of I'm not damaged goods. Yes, I maybe suffered a lot. I was traumatized a lot. A part of me that happened to, but now I've discovered something that never was subject to any of that anyway, and I'm letting that be, and I'm stepping into that as who I am, and it really transforms things fundamentally. I'm not saying don't continue with your therapeutic practices that you're already engaged in. I'm not saying that if difficult things come up, you shouldn't go to seek professional help from a counselor, a psychotherapist, even a psychiatrist, if it seems medical, whatever, you know, all of those things have their place in our lives, and I'm not in any way knocking any of it, but I'm pointing to there's a reason that the spiritual path has always made such a big deal out of enlightenment. There's a reason it's been called the pearl beyond price, the holy grail, the timeless beyond, you know, there's a reason for that, because it's really pointing to something that really transforms everything, and that really addresses everything. And if it doesn't address it specifically, it brings to the surface whatever might need some attention and addressing too. And so maybe, you know, that what you're experiencing is it's something that's brought to the surface that needs addressing. But don't try to do it in your meditation. If something's brought to the surface, it feels like, wow, I need to talk with somebody about this. I need to process this, something really intense that I just remembered about my life that's causing me a lot of emotional pain, yeah, go seek some professional help. It's fine. I'm not, but I'm just saying that it's more important. Here's what I really, I think I mean practically. No matter, and I'll say this to all of us about anything else that we might ask along this day. It's always more, in my opinion, it's always more important to stay with the meditation practice as it is and give yourself to it wholeheartedly and it's always more important to do that in meditation than anything that could come up that would seem like it needs some other kind of attention. So that goes for memories from the past. It goes for, you know, emotional pain that comes up, emotional difficult feelings that arise. That goes for creative ideas. Someone asked about that. I didn't get to it, but I'll say it right now. You know, you have great, brilliant creative ideas in meditation. You got a download from the universe of a whole great project or great book or whatever else. It's more important. It's more valuable to stay and do the practice than to give attention to anything else that comes up that might feel like, oh, this really needs my attention. I need to stop meditating and go deal with this. No, it's always more important to stay with the practice. That's what will really bear the fruit. That's what transforms everything. That's the great miracle of all this. It's why it's always been such a tremendous deal, because it really is that big. And we really are knocking right on the door with this practice. That's not something we're aiming for 10 years from now or 20 years or lifetimes. You know, this is something we're doing right now. So let the power and import of that, you know, draw your full attention into it. So I think that feels like a good, probably a good place to bring this to a close. Thanks for hanging out a few more minutes. Obviously, I have many other questions I didn't get to, but you know, we're covering a lot this month, and we're going to go at this more systematically in the months to come, taking one practice at a time and really diving deep into it for a whole month. So we'll really be able to fully harvest the fruit of each of these practices with a whole month of attention on them and really explore the subtleties and the nuances. And I want to clarify, we're not going to just do the same practice all month. We're going to go into that same area and do it in several different ways, because each of these kind of practice themes has a lot of dimensions to how we can practice it. There are many different pathways that make up that whole world of meditation. So each month will be a world, but there'll be one world instead of four worlds like this month. We're trying to pull off a solar system here, not just a single world of meditation. So again, lovely to be with you. I've really enjoyed sitting here in the meditative field with you this evening. I feel all of you and appreciate all of you being here. And if you're feeling ready to stay on with us into the next month, you can sign up for that anytime, like I said, up until the 6th. And there's a link to page to learn about the ongoing program on your webcast event page here. And you can check that out if and when you're ready. So I think I'm just going to, at the end, since this is meditation, just invite us all to drop into meditation again, leaving behind all the details, all the words, and just allow ourselves to just let the meditation flow, feel the collective field again, carrying us along. No need to make any effort to meditate, just be aware that you are aware. Just be here in this moment as it is, as you are. And I will just leave you in your meditation. So thank you for coming. Have a wonderful rest of your evening. Bye-bye.